for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And this is For The Players, the pop culture as PlayStation podcast. Over 40 years of playing PlayStation in 12 plus years, and that games media combined, I'd like to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come and check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist, where you can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are listening to this on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, and comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. If you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist, as well as our merchandise store, popculturist.com/shop, where you can buy shirts and other assorted shit with our logos on it. I don't have a witty thing to start the show this week, Max. I got nothing.
He says, like, the rest of the time, it's been witty.
Very good point. See, there's the wit. You opened it with the wit. Thank you. I set you up, and you sent it out of the park. How you been, man?
I'm all right.
Yeah.
I filed in an interesting hole this week, but hot. You know, we'll discuss that a bit later.
Oh, okay. Well, because look, so I'll kick it off with this. Now, I touched upon this last week, obviously, because, you know, it's God of War, the board game. Very excited by it. We all understand this. We all know this. Now, I don't know what, like, I think you backed Gloomhaven back in its crowdfunding days, and Frosthaven.
Frosthaven's right there.
Yeah, okay, well, it's kind of in the shot. Like, I know Frosthaven, like, I couldn't remember whether you did both through
Kickstarter.
Yeah, okay. So
I started to shoot both of them.
I think you did the Dark Souls one too, from memory. Or that came later. Yeah. Either way, in true crowdfunding fashion, I was like, oh, okay, the base game is this. Excellent. And next thing you know, they're unloading, like, this crowdfunder exclusive, this. I'm like, well, I can't, like, not have all of this. Because they're like, here's the base game, but then there's the box of just the Kickstarter. Sorry. I say Kickstarter, using a website called GameFound, where they have, like, these are our stretch goals. And, you know, if you add this box to your main order, you'll get every individual extra thing. Like, sweet, beautiful. That, with the US to AUD conversion, that's not too bad. I can work with that. That looks lovely. And then they're like, do you want a set with Brock and Sindri in it? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, well, that's a bit more money. I'm like, son of a bitch. And then they're like, well, do you want a set of the Valkyries? Like, all of the, you know, the key Valkyries? I'm like, yeah. Because I don't want an incomplete set. Like, I would die if I have an incomplete set, Max. And then they're like, do you want a set that is a bunch of Greek pantheon creatures and monsters and a various little side expansion campaign in the Greek mythos? I'm like, you son of a bitch. Yes. It is creeping up very heavily, and I am concerned. Thankfully, you can pay, like, they got monthly setups, and obviously it doesn't come out till June of next year. I assume I have to pay it when the crowdfunding ends, right?
No, you pay upon shipment.
That's good. Means I have to pay it till, like, June of next year. That rules.
Unless they've changed it, because all of the games that I've kickstarted through GameFound, so I did Frosthaven, Gloomhaven, and Tainted Grail. Mm-hmm. Tainted Grail was probably the biggest one that I did. I ended up with 3 very large boxes.
Yeah.
But that was in Euros, not US, and that was steep.
Yeah, so, like, right now, it's one of those things where you look at it and it's US price. It's like, it's $150. I'm like, that's really good. And then it goes, you want us to convert it? I'm like, no, don't convert it, because then it becomes scary really quickly. But, like, I've never backed a TRPG like this from a crowdfunding. I've never backed any game, really. The only things I've ever done through crowdfunding were, like, a mini painting palette and a couple of other little trinkety things, like a little Switch dock. through Skull & Co., which is coincidentally the same team that I bought Vita, the PlayStation Portal carrier case and stuff through. So, like, it's still a good brand. But I would feel disingenuous. This is weird, 'cause it's almost like a social standing. I would feel disingenuous if I did not back the fuck out of this project, eh? God of War, my favorite thing of all time. How could I not?
But it's also third-party God of War.
True. But it's backed in enough that they're able to tackle both pantheons, right? And it looks good.
Mm.
I don't know how. There are two gameplay videos. I'm like, I'm not going to play it. I'm just going to paint the minis.
You're going to play it.
Oh, we would totally play it for content. Speaking of, by the way, shout out to Rockin' and Rollin' on YouTube. They've been a viewer of us for yonkers. I remember them years ago now. They're an interstate truck driver.
Mm.
And one of the things they listen to is us. So, fuck yeah. But, yeah, they mentioned, they go, because you mentioned about painting minis, like, have you ever tried Warhammer, blah, 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 blah. And I said, yeah, look, the idea of, as I said last week, the idea of painting an army of all the same color makes me want to kill myself. And I mentioned that you and I were pissing and farting around the idea of, like, if we played, like, Resident Evil 2 board game and, like, videoed it and made some videos out of it. And he goes, I would watch that immediately. So we would have at least one viewer if we set up a gimmick to play some TRPGs. Or at least in this case, Resident Evil 2, the board game from, I think it's Steelforge Games, guys. But they did Dark Souls too, didn't they?
Yeah.
I've only ever opened it the once, and I painted a couple of the minis, and then I got distracted and sort of wandered off, because I think that was very much a Facebook marketplace during key lockdown purchases. But no, I'm super down to paint those minis, and they would look so bad. Like, they're not going to look good. So it's a bold strategy on my part for spending all this money on a franchise, a brand that I love.
Do they have a tier, like a price point where they're painted for you?
No, because obviously the main reason I want them is to paint them. So I'll have to do a lot of practice between now and June to get, like, legitimately better. So that they're not hideous.
Well, I still have a ton of minis that...
Oh, I still have a ton of minis. Like, there is so much gray over there. It's crazy. I would still argue... I know, not very PlayStation related, but, like, I would still argue you could totally paint these more than well. So...
Nah.
The technique that was taught to me was done with the idea that even if you're crap, you can make it look good.
Yeah.
Like, you know... It's a good speed paint way that gets the job done. But yeah, like if you got some shit that needs to get done, that will give me an incentive, because the pressure is, oi, dickhead, can you paint these and get it done? Like you did with, I think, Gloomhaven I started.
You started on the Gloomhaven. I think I gave you the characters that we were using at the time.
Yeah. Have you planned to spend an exorbitant amount of money in the future on something really irrelevant?
Maybe.
Oh, shit, what have you worked on?
No, not at all.
Oh. Blame.
I'm being good.
Yeah.
Attempting to, anyway.
Yeah. So what's been that? Like I said, that's one of the standout things for me this week, aside from, like, you know, getting to, like, wrestle in a ring with my son over the weekend. That was the best. But yeah, what's your shining thing of this week?
Nothing. My son's sleep regressing and no one's sleeping in the house because he's not.
Rad.
So we're all tired and cranky and angry.
Everyone's just, like, seconds from stabbing each other.
Yeah. So Friday night, I was up until 4 o'clock in the morning with him.
But you do that anyway.
But it's different when I can't do my things.
Very true.
Staying up till 4 a.m. playing games for review, easy. Staying up till 4 a.m.
for work, because you're getting paid. Like, yeah, if a little Chadley, not his name, was to pay you, that would be rad. Like, you're working overnights and stuff, would make sense. But
and then last night, because I was tired from the night before, I wanted to go to bed early, and he's like, meh. And I'm like, fuck you. Just go to sleep, you son of a bitch.
Well, from last week, if he's not trying to launch himself off any object or choke himself with cables, he's one of keeping you awake. So you want to choke yourself with a cable.
That's it. Okay. But my week's been pretty chill.
Yeah? Yeah, as I said, I myself is very much in that same boat. But I think what we really should just dive into now is what have we been playing this week? Now, we talked about this. We talked about last week in terms of the embargo date. However, we had not played enough that we were comfortable with to release any sort of video or anything around the title. So, you get it now. Thanks to PlayStation Australia, Max and I have been able to spend quite a bit of time with Stellar Blade. Now, granted, it was very much a Max game more than a me game. I wanted to play it to sort of be like, well, it's all about the boobs and the butts. Is there more to this game than that? So I've dipped my toe in it, spent a little bit of time with it, but
he saw one frame of boob and butt. Went, nah, it's all boob and butt.
Yeah, it's like opened the game and then her boobies are physicsing everywhere. I'm like, nah, this is unacceptable. I'm out of here. All right, Max, lay it down. What's the premise of Stellar Blade? So it's from Shift Up, a Korean studio. I incorrectly called them a Japanese studio a couple weeks ago because it just seems in that vein, but it is a South Korean studio.
Yes. So the plot of the game is essentially that humanity has been driven from Earth after losing a war against the Netibas, which are these extraterrestrial, monsterish beings. Mm-hmm. And essentially, you play as a character called Eve, who is essentially tasked with destroying these higher-up Netibas to reclaim your lost home.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, fun ensues as you progress through the game.
Mm-hmm.
I've put in about 20-ish odd hours at the moment. I've beaten a few of the boss Netibas. So at its core, this is essentially an action game. Very much akin to that of like Bayonetta, Devil May Cry.
But not as rapid. I think it more fits. The comparison that I have seen is Nier Automata.
Yeah, Nier Automata is a very good fit, especially in the fact that you play as a female protagonist and you have a little sidekick flying around that shoots things for you. So in that vein, yes, it's very similar to that. The combat's probably its best selling point. The story so far for me has been a little bit hit and miss. It's very on the nose. it's a very played out trope.
Because if anyone's played the demo, like it's out there, like you're exploring the world in like Earth in the future.
Yeah. So, I didn't notice. So when I first started playing this game, I felt like there was something off. It turns out there's actually some input delay that is based around having the parry system work correctly.
Okay.
Which is bizarre for me.
How so?
So essentially, to get the timing correct on a parry, they've had to put a delay on all inputs to make sure that you. So essentially, you can't parry or dodge mid swing. So if you've committed to an action, you're committing to that action until it's instead of just instantaneously rolling out of it and like attack, essentially like auto attack canceling. You'll see the animation play through before it kicks in. So a lot of the times where you're like, I clearly press dodge, you'll get smacked in the face.
That's exactly my experience. Yes.
So I have a few gripes with the combat. Essentially, so there's two ways to a counterattack. So there's the standard parry. So if you time your parry or your block in time with an attack, it'll parry. And then as you hit every parry in a combo, you'll be able to do a devastating attack at the end of the combo. It's not like Dark Souls where you block one and you get a backstab thrust straight away. You have to parry every single individual attack in the combo before it actually kicks in, which is cool. That's fine. On the other hand of parry, they've got an ability called perfect dodge. So if you dodge at the perfect time, you will slow down time. You essentially do a backflip. You dodge out of the way, and then you can hit either triangle or square to do a follow-up attack. That'll deal
like a counter attack, essentially.
Yeah, that'll do bonus damage. The problem with this is. Your attacks don't have priority. So if you perfect dodge and then go to smack them, you're going to get smacked in the face.
Yeah.
most of the time, because most of the time it's on a single attack. So
and very similar to the same way that, for at least from my experience, so now that I've got the framing of the way you've explained it, is that in the same way that you can't cancel an attack midway through, neither can they. So as you go through that moment, especially if it's like a three move sequence, if you dodge at the first one and you go in, they're like, here's the second one, dickhead, boosh, you know? Like the dodge doesn't disrupt their sequence.
No, so once you understand that, combat becomes very fluid, very not easy, but very understanding.
Mm.
You can kind of work your way through it. There's two difficulty modes. There is normal and there is story mode. Story mode essentially turns on all the accessibility functions. So it will make parrying a quick time event on screen and slow things down for you. So you can parry everything. Same with your perfect dodge. There's attacks that can't be parried, so you can perfect dodge them. It'll show it up as a quick time event, allowing you extra time to get the perfect dodge, which is cool. And then obviously it lowers the health of the enemies around you, and it also increases your it increases your defense, so you take less damage. I've seen about three or four of the biomes at the moment. I'm a little bit way in. Very early on, just after you actually meet this person during the demo, you meet a lad named Adam, who is essentially part of one of the last human colonies on Zion. And he essentially recruits you. He helps you. He's kind of your taxi driver, for lack of a better term. He's a guy with a spaceship who flies you around to all the places. He's got the information, and he's your in to the leaders of Zion, who are like, we can help you find out where these Alpha Natibas are so you can destroy the Elder, because apparently they seem to have like this kind of hive mind, is the belief. So the more of the Alphas you kill, you can use them to find the upper tiers.
Okay.
So I've fought about four of them so far. I ended up having to drop the difficulty for one of them because it was like 4 o'clock in the morning and it was irking me. The one thing I love about this game is the character designs of the monsters. They are disturbingly grotesque.
Like, they are gross, and it rules. So like, it's
so good.
They have that. I think one of the first like major bosses, I think you sort of fight, kind of looks like the creature on the cover art of the Agony game, like with the big horns that kind of come together. But like, if his face was split in two and looked like this giant, like it has that very similar to like Alien. I forget the name of the gentleman that designed Alien, but they have that kind of. Some of them have that almost like sexualized sort of little setup to them. But then there's those, Geiger, thank you. There's those, like, those, when you first kick into the game and you fight these almost little ball bag looking dudes, and they have like weird little hairs, it looks like you're fighting a bunch of nutsacks. And like the fact that they're covered in this little weird pube almost hair adds to the discomfort of it. It does make it really gross. But that's, and one of the things that I'd award this game for is the creature design, because there's a lot of things that I'm not a big fan of the game about for. But that is one thing I unquestionably.
I mean, even the locations and the levels themselves look stunning.
Mm.
Like, it is a very good looking game.
Once again, referring to that, like, opening sequence, because obviously we don't want to touch upon spoilers or anything. And I, you know, you're a lot further in than I am. That's absolutely, absolutely true. Like that opening sequence where, you know, your ship lands in a kind of catastrophic way, and you have to get from this location to another location. Like, that is an incredibly intense encounter, and it does set like a precedent, I guess, in terms of what kind of action you would experience. And in some ways, I felt the game hasn't delivered on that yet, outside of, you know, it feels like a lot of funneled circumstances running between, you know, these at least in this initial stage, city blocks. You know, there's like doors, but they're locked. And maybe you can open later, and then you find your little campfire equivalent.
Those doors that are locked they essentially become shortcuts.
Yeah, and very.
On the other side, you can unlock the very Dark Souls-y, very.
Yeah, but yeah, my brain went to, because I spent a lot more time playing Bloodborne than anything. So yeah, to me, it had that Bloodborne of like you open it up and that world becomes a whole lot easier to traverse. I presume down the line, there is a lot more backwards and forwards.
So a little bit further than where you are, you'll eventually get access to an actual map. And then it becomes kind of like a open world where you'll have one large area to explore, but there's little mini places, dungeons, for lack of a better term.
Like points of interest almost?
Yeah, yeah. So you'll go into them for the mission that you're on, essentially, or for the quest that you're doing, but it's very much that big open space with a few points of interest that you'll interact with to do quest objectives and stuff like that, and then you'll go back into that open but enclosed area that you kind of explore freely.
Is like, I know, like in terms of other words that we would use, that I know it took me a while to think about the term words from other sort of taxonomy and vernacular, like would an instance be a good way to explain it?
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. I know we're getting in the weeds, but I think it's important to, because like, when you look at this game, like it does feel, at least from an aesthetic standpoint, does feel quite Soulsborne. But the idea of what is a Soulsborne is a debate in and of itself. But
it's definitely that. So what I would like liken it to would be essentially, what's a good example? Because it's not like a fully open world like that of Dark Souls or Elden Ring.
What about like Shadows of the Tomb Raider when they implemented the second one, Rise of the Tomb Raider, where haven't played it? Okay, cool. So there is a space in the middle. There's this kind of central location where you can do a bunch of things, and you essentially walk off that. There's little, you know, kind of little shuffly things you shuffle through and you're in this whole other area that feels bigger, but it's kind of not. And like, it's very clearly segmented, almost like Resident Evil 7 in terms of like each have their own little destination and there's a big central hub.
You know what? It's not going to do it justice, but it's like Kingdom Hearts.
It doesn't help me at all.
It's essentially you load a level,
yep.
which is the world that you're on to do that mission.
Yep.
It'll have an open space that you can explore with all the points of interest. And then once you're done with that mission, you fly back to the home base. You do your things there, and then you go back out to the next mission.
Okay, so okay.
They're not interconnected. You have to like load in your spaceship to get there, and then you will fly back and go and so on and so forth. There have been some that are connected. So, for instance, Zion, which is the place that you get to very, very early, it's a very core place kind of that gives you all the missions that you're doing. That is connected to one of the open world spaces, but then the next one you go to, you have to fly to it. You do your thing, and then you come back to Zion, complete the tasks, go back out again, and it's very much this back and forth, but they're not connected in a way that you can just walk from one spot to another.
Yep.
It's very much level-based, but they're open.
Okay. Like, I know we still got caught in the weeds, but I think that's a point to express, because how that is framed, once again, because I know it's easier to sort of shoehorn everything into that Soulsborne space, but like when you've got, you know, campfire-esque scenarios where you, if you take a seat and you heal, enemies come back, you've got these sort of like paths that you could open to run it a bit quicker. It does set up that understanding that it
is. It's like Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
Okay, perfect.
The areas are open, but when you go to the next level, you fly to the next planet and you do your level, but it's an open world to explore in that level specifically.
Ah, okay. Well, there you go. Cool. Love that. So, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, as you touched upon, the campfires are essentially old soda pot machines, or like things like that, which are cool. And this is where the RPG element comes in. You gain skill points from fighting, doing objectives, and then you can upgrade your skill tree, whether that be your survival, your attacking, new abilities to use, all of that fun stuff. So it's got minor RPG elements in it. But apart from that, I'm very much enjoying the game so far. Now that I kind of understand the combat a little bit better, now that I know that there's that input delay, that there's the fact that you cannot cancel any animations. Once you've committed to something, you've committed to it. Yeah, very much enjoying to see where it goes. But yeah, so far the story has been the weakest point for me. It hasn't quite grabbed me yet.
Yeah.
But it is a very good looking game from a, like, just an enemy creation perspective of, like, those things are nasty. The level design's really good. Everything looks great. Yeah, I've been having a blast with it so far.
So with that in mind, like, one of the, I guess, the key contention points, and it's something that I have brought up in previous weeks, is the one of the key selling points of this game, one of the key conversation points around this game, is Eve as a character, but not her as a character, but her as an individual slash object. How is she as a protagonist?
She's the least interesting person in this game.
Okay. From, like, the characters that, like, I have met, yes.
To be honest, she's the least interesting person in this game.
For me, like, the delivery is kind of bland. She's like, "Ooh." And I just, it didn't, like, hit with me at all. But I also, I'm very aware that heading into this game, it is not for me. The reason I, you know, thankfully we're very kindly provided a review code, is I wanted to be proven wrong. I wanted a Bugsnax moment. I wanted to me look at this game originally going, what? And then play it and then go, oh, hang on. But as of right now, it hasn't done that for me, but I've not spent as much time in it as you.
Granted, it's also not a genre that you super love anyway.
No. However, though, in context, the reason that, you know, we discussed Nier Automata before, I didn't finish Nier Automata, but it, once again, not really my game, but I respect the shit out of that game. Because when I was playing it, I'm like, there is something here that is dope. And, like, you know, even the changing of the dynamics, like, you know, what starts as this over-the-shoulder action game, then becomes a side-scroller out of nowhere, and then a top-down, like, shooty thing. Like, there's an extra level of character within Nier Automata that as of right now, that I feel that Stellar Blade is missing. As someone that has played Nier Automata as well, would you, like, I'd say it's a tough thing to compare, but it's the easiest comparison. Like, is there just, like, that, is it missing that something?
Look, Yoko Taro, who was the director of Nier Automata, is brilliant. And, like, I like Nier Automata because I already enjoyed the original Nier way back in the day when it originally came out. Like, I already had a love for that style of game and series, and I wanted to see what they were going to do next. Whereas this is, you know, a new IP from a new development studio, and it's the harsh reality of being compared to things that have already existed for a long time and already very loved. If I was handed a copy of both games now and said which one's better, it is Nier Automata, because I just found the story to be more appealing than what I'm currently seeing here. But again, I haven't finished it yet. It may have this amazing revelation at the back end of the game, that completely changes the perspective of what I thought I was playing. And until I get to that point, until I finish it, I feel like I can't give the answer it deserves.
Yeah. Now. Well, in that case,
because it has that potential, but that potential is currently unknown.
So my key question to you then, and then this is sort of wrap up our, this thoughts around this, is Stellar Blade more than boobs and butts?
Oh yeah, I mean, granted, I haven't really noticed anything. Like, the cutscenes are fairly, like, they honestly, like I said, Eve is, like, the least interesting character, and a lot of the cutscenes so far have focused on the other characters that you're talking to. you know, there is the flashy, you know, at the start when you jump out of your pod, you know. But other than that, like, unless you're... because there's different outfits that you can unlock for you.
And some of them apparently, like, really, like, nice.
Yeah, some of them are pretty cool. I'm wearing one at the moment. She's got, like, a racing jacket on, as if she's, like a supercar driver.
Nice.
It's, yeah, but... That's the least interesting part of the game to me, is that character, because so far, bland as shit. every other person is way more interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, beautiful. Well, I can assume that you'll have more to say next week, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully I'll have it wrapped by next week.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, be sure to come return next week for a follow-up and discussion around Stellar Blade. Once again, big thank you to the team over at PlayStation Australia for providing us the review code so we could have this experience. See, the challenge for me that I had, as I think I talked about this last week, is I did set out to give Stellar Blade a run. But yeah, after watching the Fallout series, I've just been mostly playing fucking Fallout. Like, before work, on my lunch break, I'm playing Fallout 4. Been playing Fallout 76 with Craig and Ange, having a blast. But it's not even as... there are some things in the game that confuse me in terms of, like, how do we all collectively do the same quest at the same time? I'm yet to make it work. So we have to kind of, like... work in tandem and enter any of these instances, you know, if you go in, like, I can go in with the team leader, but only they get the progression for the mission. I don't. So we all have to go in separately anyway. So it negates the whole purpose of going in and focusing on this game as a team. It is certainly a lot better than release. So we were very kindly provided a review code from Bethesda when it launched. And I'm already further in the game now in the last 2 weeks than when I initially reviewed it. And a lot of that was because the game was just not good. And there was no organic progression, like, in terms of what incentivized you to move forward. With back then, there were no NPCs. It was go read terminals, go talk to these robots, fight some ghouls, repeat. Where now... since the introduction of, I think it was the Wastelanders expansion, where there are now NPCs in the world. So I started a brand new character, and you wouldn't even know that there was an original version of this game that didn't have these individuals in it. They have seamlessly combined what was Fallout 76 to now what is Fallout 76. Because when you come out of the vault, one of the first things you do, you chat to NPCs. Awesome. None of this lonely walk where there is no life, you know, up until the first town where you're like, all right, well, is something going to happen? And you talk to a computer. The computer's like, hey, go read that terminal. You're, okay. So, like, it does feel like a more lived-in world, and it does feel like that Fallout experience with mates. Because, like, we are admittedly having more fun building our camps and, like, then going on scavenging runs together and, like, going, hey, I need this, you need that, sweet. So we would go find a location, and if I happen to... because, obviously, each individual has different items in the world. Like, if you and I were to want go across the same stash
instance,
yeah, we would have different loot. So if you're like, hey, I got a stack of steel in mine, what'd you get? Oh, I got a stack of wood. Sweet, let's swap. Boom. So there's, like, that good incentive to trade. As of yet, we've not met any hostile other players. Granted, like, we've put ourselves in, was it the pacifist mode, where it's only if someone attacks us and then we choose to retaliate, will it count? Like, I don't want to be in the completely "don't touch me" mode. I want that if I feel confident that I'm going to have some fun, I'll fight back. But then when I've seen people that are level 298 and I'm level 17, I go, okay, that's cool. You can go do whatever it is you want to go do over there. However, one of the funnest parts of my experience in Fallout 76. Now, thankfully, it's not happened near me, but one of the things that was introduced later on is that you yourself can organize nuke drops. So the fun part is you're, you know, I'm walking along building, you know, getting like, oh, let's go find some ceramic so I can build this fucking useless shit in my house, in my little camp. And to hear this nuclear explosion incoming, I'm like, where is that happening? Where am I? Okay, I gotta stop. In that moment, you stop what you do and you check your map. Where is this going down? Like, oh, thank Christ. And like, thankfully, it's not been like, because the map of Appalachia is so large that like, it's, you kind of have to intentionally be in these locations for it to happen. Like, no one's gonna bomb Vault 76 itself. It's not gonna happen. I think it happens in, you know, but there is that moment of, uh-oh. And that having that true moment of fear is legitimately really fun. But yeah, and then obviously switching between that and Fallout 4, which did get its PS5 update this week. I've been playing it on PC. It itself got an update. It runs pretty good on PC already. As you get the new missions, etc. I did boot it up on the console. I still think the PC is a better experience, like with most Bethesda games. But that's only because I've spoiled myself now playing it on PC. Had I not done that 2 weeks ago and I just waited to the PlayStation release, I would be probably praising the crap out of that, because it looks good. It runs reasonably at 60. Like, there is still some slowdown and a lot of motion blur to deliver that. But like, I was playing it on the portal in bed, and I ran a survival mode just for funsies. That shit's brutal. Like, because it's very similar to 76, where you have to actively eat and drink, and then now it's like, oh, you know, like, if you die, you die. I'm like, oh, poo. So it completely has me rethinking how I engage with encounters. And also think about like, well, all right, what kind of things am I needing to grab? Because I barely grab food in the traditional like Fallout 4, because I'll just use stim packs and blood packs and whatever. But yeah, now that I have to go like, oh, hang on. It's like, oh, I probably should grab that mac and cheese. I should probably grab that fucking mutt berry, mutt fruit, whatever it is. Mm. Yeah. So I know that you also installed Fallout 76 this week.
Yeah, and I uninstalled it.
That was quick.
Garbage.
Did you not have the same experience?
I played it, right? So I got on, and I've already got a character because I've played it before. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm going to start a new character. It's like, cool. I go through the thing. And it's like, would you like to skip to level 20? And I'm like, I'm looking at my other character. My other character's like level 20 something. And I'm like, sure. Let's have a look at what they do if you choose to level skip. And the game's like, okay, please select a class. And I'm like, okay, cool. And I'm trying to scroll through to have a look at these pre-made perk packages that you can pick. And it's like, you have selected the first one. You didn't fucking do shit. Here you go.
Apparently all those pre-builds are poo. Hence why I just went to level one.
They probably are. And then I walked outside, spoke to the first dude, and then the game crashed. I'm like, I fucking waited so long for this. Because it took me 10 minutes to download this game, right? Mm-hmm. And then proceeded to take me 2.5 hours to unpack the files for it to fucking install through Microsoft Store, because it's a garbage program.
Okay.
It's nothing to do with the game.
Not at all, because I played it through Steam and had none of those concerns.
Yeah, the Microsoft Store sucks ass. So I've uninstalled it because it's fucking massive and I'm realistically never going to play it.
Yeah. That's totally fair.
Not. I'll tell you what I have been playing this week, Ryan.
Oh, yeah?
Fucking Hades 2.
Oh, shit. I thought you want to be like, oh, but how good's Baltaro?
Nah. I mean, Baltaro is still pretty fucking good, but no, I've been playing Hades 2. So I was lucky enough to have access to the technical test that they're currently running.
Sick. Are you allowed to talk about it?
Yeah, there's people been streaming it.
Sick. Just double checking.
There's reviews online. I didn't sign anything. I just signed up for the thing, and they're like, phew, done. Sweet. It's through Steam. Hades 2's fucking great. already fantastic game. Fucking cranked it to 13, added a few new things, and went, done.
Mm.
And the whole weekend I've been playing it, and it's like, you know what? You can not... Everything's locked. Everything's behind a glass panel that I can't get to. And I'm just like, I just want more. I just want more. The game at its core, it's exactly the same as the first game, but they've added channeling moves. So you play as Zagreus' daughter.
Nice.
And she's a witch. So all of her basic attacks can be... so essentially, like in the first game, X is... square is a basic attack, triangle is your ranged attack, and circle is your like special move. If you hold down square, you do an empowered attack that costs mana points. Same with your triangle and your circle abilities. So the weapon you start off with is the witch's staff, so it's you can smack people in the face. But if you hold that button down, you shoot fucking flames out both sides of you and just clear a room. Beautiful. Love it. It's the same system as in Hades 1. So you finish a room, and depending on which room you've selected, you'll get that
real incentive that reward. So yeah.
You get the incentive reward. It'll be in-game currency or an upgrade to your boons. It's got the same kind of host of characters so far. You get boons from Zeus and Poseidon.
Are they all still sexy?
They're all still sexy.
Awesome.
There's even new sexy.
New sexy.
Sexy, old sexy, great sexy.
Oh, dude. Okay, look. Hades, those sort of roguelike games aren't for me because I don't have the patience. However, Hades 1 is spectacular, and the added sexiness of just everything in that game is brilliant. And I presume they're all new like character designs in terms of the sketch and but still sexy.
It's so good. Apparently, it's going to launch. So the technical test ends tomorrow. And Supergiant have announced that it's going to release into early access very soon after the end of the technical test, because it was flagged as Q2.
Yeah.
So hopefully soon, because I want to play more.
And to the credit of Supergiant, like Hades, a big part of its success was that it was within this early access. People could see it, very similar to Baldur's Gate, honestly, that, you know, you see it from go to woe and you experience all the little tinkers, the little changes. So you get to have this lived and shared experience with this development team. And it becomes an incredible product in the end because of it.
Yeah. So if you're a fan of Hades, Hades 2 is a no-brainer. I've been having a blast with it.
So as mentioned, a lot of it is glass window. There's not a lot of stuff that you can access. Can you,
you can see where all the weapons you can unlock are going to sit.
Oh.
You can only unlock one of them.
That was going to be my next question.
I was just like, please. I've yet to beat the first boss. Mm. So it's a different setup to how Hades 1 ran. So you don't start in whichever the first realm of Hades that you started in. You start in a different area, and you've got to create your own exit because it has its own storyline like the first one did.
Awesome.
Yeah, super keen.
Ooh. Oh, I love that. Hell yeah.
Ooh. What else have you been playing this week?
all right, outside of that, so I had my son this weekend, which is lovely. I think I touched upon it, 2 weeks ago when he was here. At this moment, he is so enamored with Cuphead. I don't know what it is. We also got him. We also began the test of getting him tested for ASD this week. So it would make sense why he loves shit like fucking Cuphead and Five Nights at Freddy's and whatever. So it's very likely my son may be on the spectrum, which has then made me consider maybe I'm on the spectrum because it fucking makes sense. So it's been very interesting. Yeah. So with my boy, as he is right now, a little ADHD mess that he is, very similar to me, there are things that he gravitates towards and gets really locked in on, which is fantastic. But most of the time they can be relatively short lived. But what is the beauty of this, of Cuphead as the thing that is his current little fixation, is that it's so rewarding because he is literally getting better at the game. Like he is, without even realizing, he's just running the levels because he likes the bosses and he likes that he can do it. I saw him complete aisle one, get all the contracts by himself, no assistance. Like, he's clearing these levels that even me, X amount of years ago when I played it for the first time, was like, fuck this game. Where, you know how when we remember back to when we were kids and when these play games were stupid hard? We're like, how do we ever do that? The answer is persistence. And my son has demonstrated a level of persistence and focus on this game that I can only be... Look, I'm already objectively proud of my son. Like, I am proud of my son all the time just for him being him. But seeing him take this, run with it, and actively seek to get better and get into the meta of it, really. Like, you know, this is the weapon that I need to have for this guy because, you know, the way this level's mapped out, it brings me closer. So I'm going to use the shotgunning sort of one. And I'm like, dude, you are like nth degree into this. And then he's telling me how to beat the bosses better because, like, daddy, you made a mistake because you didn't do this. I'm like, if I knew what I was doing, I would have fucking done it. But that in itself has been lovely, and being able to share that experience with him as well, as we've been doing it all together as well, you know, alongside that, and you know, like we'll chip off bosses together, and because he himself, like he's a lot better now, but he is getting much better at that emotional regulation, you know, not being prone to anger or being prone to giving up very quickly for something that doesn't work in his favor. The fun part of this is, I think I talked about this before, is that he's essentially doing that to me. And he's doing a lot of the whole, daddy, it's okay. Don't need to be angry. Should we have a break? Do you want to, like, what? It's almost like schooling me and being like, well, what are you having trouble with? You know, and then I'll do the same to him if something's kind of getting him frustrated. And it's been a really good, like, bonding, you know, as we throw ourselves into this boss rush games, and getting our crap kicked in for hours on end. Like, I think we played it today for about like 5 hours, obviously a couple little breaks in between, just to, you know, as we're getting a little bit too frustrated. I'm like, all right, we're gonna have to step away for a sec, bud. But then we came back and we talked about it. We broke down like the tactics and what we're going to do. And, you know, he'll be like, well, you bring these weapons in and, you bring these ones, I'll bring this one and we'll do this and you have that charm. And it's been a genuinely cool experience. It's a cool experience just with my son, period. Just having him around is the best. But seeing him in the same way that, because I know you've been playing the Paw Patrol games with your daughter.
I'll have a really quick tidbit to add.
Yeah.
Paw Patrol game after you finish.
So after, because we played them as they released. So once again, big thank you to the team over at Bandai Namco Australia because they provided us review codes because my son was a real big fan of Paw Patrol. I spoke to the rep and I was like, yo, this could be hilarious. Like, my kid's 3. Like, I'm going to film some videos. It'd be funny. And he did. And like, because the Paw Patrol Honor Roll is a very, very simple side-scrolling platformer. Right? And then when they release the second, which is Paw Patrol Mighty Pup Save Adventure Bay, it becomes a third-person platformer. And then the game with a little bit of open world. And then the following one after, which I believe it is Paw Patrol World, is essentially an open world Paw Patrol, kind of. So it was fun playing with him to sort of see him get actively better, because in the same way that you would use, you know, you escalate and you get, as you get better, you graduate to these different games. I saw that with Paw Patrol. Like, he played it so much that he got the platinum himself, nailed it, and then went, oh, what's the next one? And then the year after came Mighty Pups. And we had just recently watched the Mighty Pups movie. So he was stoked. Did that. Having to start use 2 dual sticks, you know, which is dope. Then he suddenly starts doing that. They extrapolate. And then now he's playing fucking Cuphead. Like, if my son isn't destined to do this, like, it'd be hilarious if some point in time that, you know, we pass on this to our kids. Maybe not your kid. I think Hadley gives a shit that hard. But he is most definitely his father's son in his appreciation for games and like critiquing them and breaking them down. And it's absolutely it's amazing. It's one of the greatest experiences. But you have not nice words to say about Paw Patrol.
Yeah, so we finished Paw Patrol Safe Adventure Bay. Hadley loved it. All the mini games are really easy for her to understand. It's essentially hit the buttons as they show up on the screen. Exploration's fine. There's times where she gets frustrated doing some of the simplistic, some of the platforming. She's like, "Hey, this isn't working for me." She doesn't quite understand it. Sometimes we just don't have to fucking push the thumbstick all the way forward. We can just do it a little bit.
And yeah,
little
increments. Yeah.
It's either fucking balls to the wall or not at all with her, which is fine. We got through it. We finished the whole game. And she's like, "You got two Paw Patrol games. Can we play the other one?" I'm like, "Sure." And for a while, she loved it because you can play as any of the Paw Patrol lads that you want at any time.
The boys.
At any time. Whereas in Safe Adventure Bay, you could only play the ones that needed for that mission. And Hadley's like, "I want to play a Sky. Sky's got a helicopter. She's so cool. She wears pink." And you can, and in Paw Patrol World, you can spawn in their vehicles and you can drive around. So she's like, "Hey, Dad, can I fly the helicopter?" And I'm like, "No."
You can drive the helicopter?
Like, you can drive the helicopter. She's like, "Dad, helicopters fly." I'm like, "I know that. This game sucks. I'm sorry." And she's like, "Can we just play the other one?" I'm like, "Okay." She was so disappointed in the fact that you can't fly the helicopter. She's like, "This is silly. Helicopters fly, Dad. They don't drive. What is it? I just want to fly around."
But that in itself is an incredible plot point to the TV show, because like, they've had races before and they're all like, "Meow," and she's like following the roads like a dickhead. Just like, "Just Sky, just fly across the bay. Just go exactly where you need to. You have an advantage."
No, she's got to hit the checkpoints that are on the road, man. Yeah, so Hadley was unimpressed with Paw Patrol World. The camera is also garbage in that game. It just doesn't work. Most of the time, it's in front of you facing the wrong direction, and you can never see where the fuck you're going. Because it is not twin stick. You cannot move the fucking camera.
Oh, so it's one of those ones where you turn it, and then it'll eventually realize it and go and swing around?
Yeah.
Ugh. It's like, as part of the PlayStation Plus Premium, they're like, "Hey, you want to play the old Toy Story 2 game on PS1? I'm like, "Sure." "No, don't." Because it does, like, once again, it also does not have a second stick. The camera is on L1 and R1. So, and because it's not a touch sensitive button, it's on or off. You go, "Ha, camera pivots." And you're like, "No, that's too much." "Ha, camera pivots somehow further than it was originally." And you're like, "How?"
Yep.
So I'll hold it for 2 seconds and it's over there somehow. Like, God damn it. Man, we have come so far in games and I really appreciate it, because old games are poo. Well, they were great for the time. They became poo later.
But the other game that has taken up most of my week this week has been Magic the Gathering Arena.
God damn it.
So, I used to play this back in the day. Like, I used to play it a lot. Mm-hmm. And I logged back in and it's like, "You have 25 unopened packs." I'm like, "Oh, really?" They're all the fucking things.
Oh, that is the most dangerous sentence that can happen.
Because they give you free packs every time a new thing comes out to incentivize you into fucking buying more. So I now almost own all of the Lord of the Rings pack, because I had so many wild cards for crafting. I was like, "I'm just gonna craft me some decks." I made a spreadsheet, I've made some decks, I'm on a fucking 20 something win streak now. I installed it on my phone, I play it all the time. I've got a problem. I just found out that if I buy physical cards, I get codes for to have them digitally in my Magic the Gathering arena. Like, it's getting scary.
Oh no. And look, to make matters worse, a friend of ours has just joined the team of the distributors of MTG here in Australia, and thankfully I'm not gonna do it on your behalf. This is your drug until that Jurassic Park set comes out, and then I'm gonna probably annoy them. But because, like, look, once again, we don't cover that. It would be dirty of us to reach out and abuse our friendship. But, like, the fact that it's, like, there, it's, like, I imagine that's for you, right? Knowing that it's, like, right there.
I'd do it. I would stream just to justify my...
Like, pack openings and then also play it online.
Oh, dude, I play it all the fucking time. That is my short content from now on. I'm just gonna be me playing Magic the Gathering Arena on my phone.
So, like, are all the cool sets in there?
So, there's no...
I ask because I'm a psycho and I might... playing it, don't give a shit. Collecting the shit, though. Mm.
So, some of them are... So, the Fallout one's not on there, to my knowledge.
That would get me in right now, actually, if it was the Fallout.
So, the Lord of the Rings one was a big one for me. They've got the Baldur's Gate set. They've got the Dungeons & Dragons set. Yeah. They've got the...
They have the Doc Who?
Not yet.
Yeah. Suddenly, I'm less interested.
That's out yet?
Doctor Who? Yeah. Pretty sure. And then there was a Transformers one at some point. Is that in there?
That's definitely not in there. Unless I just missed it. But like, so it's got the new Outlaws of Thunder Junction stuff that looks cool. It's got the Murders at Karlov Manor. It's a huge list. But because it's a... because it's a rotating set list, you have different play modes. So standard format, you can't play the Lord of the Rings cards because they're classified as legacy. They're not in the current format. And I swear they only just fucking came out. So
play 6 months ago, not even.
You have to make what they refer to as alchemy decks, which are like... which is like a different set to standard... so you kind of all play against equally power distributed cards.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Because obviously some are vastly better than others. But I'm having a blast. And like I said, I've got a spreadsheet going of what cards I need for my next deck, how many games I need to win to get the amount of in-game currency I need to purchase more packs. It's getting scary. I've spent like 50,000 in-game currency so far that I had saved up.
Have you spent a single real world?
I have not put any money into it.
Is that are you on the precipice?
Maybe.
But obviously, yeah, you sent me like the fucking pack. You went, hey, check out this. It's the starter pack's only $28. I could buy that and get a code. I'm like, oh God.
Two codes for both the decks.
Well, you didn't tell me there was two codes, Max.
It's dangerous.
It changes everything. Have you got the One Ring?
No, it's not even craftable.
Do you have to get it in a pack?
Yeah.
So how does the code work? Does it know what's in the pack?
Yeah, so essentially, so it's the same with, like, I believe Pokemon.
Yeah, Pokemon, yeah, you have the same thing. Yeah.
Because these are predetermined starter decks, it knows exactly what cards are in it.
But what about boosters, though? Because in Pokemon, you get booster packs, and that there is codes in the booster packs.
But I would imagine those codes would just give you a virtual booster pack, and it would probably be
different. Oh, okay, yeah, I've never actually looked into it, so I can't confirm that.
It would be one for one.
Okay.
And you would just buy a booster pack, you get a booster pack. Is my guess. But I've been having fun with my Lord of the Rings themed decks.
What is the most powerful Lord of the Rings card you have? Sauron.
I have Sauron, and he's a pain in the ass to summon because it requires one of every color land.
Oh.
And running every color land in a deck is the dumbest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life because you can only run a certain amount of cards. And then you have to, you can't be like, oh, I only need one of this thing to summon him. And then you've got a 1 in 70 chance to draw the motherfucker to get what you need. So you can't run like a blue and red deck and be like, I want to put Sauron in and just put one of each color land in and be like, let's hope for the best because you'll never find those lands.
It is funny you say that because by saying that, that instantly reminded me of the DC deck building game, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And because I got the Green Lantern Core DLC expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one of those things, if you collect one of it, all the rings, burr, instant win to you. I'm like, oh, what if I could hunt down all those rings, eh? You know? I haven't played that in forever. That would be a fun game to get back into, by the way. That'd be good fun.
So at the moment, I've got two decks that I run. One is a blue and red deck. So my main carries for that a fucking Bilbo and, nice. And Gandalf.
Nice.
So essentially, I just give Bilbo
How very Hobbit and Unexpected Journey.
I literally just give Bilbo the ring, and then Bilbo can't be blocked, and you just fucking constantly attack with Bilbo, and he just gives you free money. Shit. Every time he deals damage, you just get free mana to spend.
And I assume this tickles like that min-max part of your brain, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, see, I'm not smart enough for all that. I just like collecting things.
And then my other deck is a blue-green deck that literally revolves around the elves and playing Elrond and Arwen, and you just buff everyone when you scry for cards. And every single card I play allows you to scry, so I just put a ton of monsters on the board and buff them all and just attack. It's so much fun. I'm having a blast. That's what I was doing while I was waiting for you to start.
I assume like that was probably going to be the case.
Yeah. And Balatro is still Balatroing. I'm enjoying it. I'm having a blast.
There's a lot of card game going on right now.
I had some fucking crazy runs the other day. Yeah.
All right. Well, look, it's been an hour and we haven't even touched upon any of the news yet. So let's do that. This is the section we call Inform the Players. We tell you about what happened this week in PlayStation. Dear God.
The big firmware patch dropped. So we now have the community game help feature. So the community game help feature essentially expands the PlayStation 5's game help system by presenting you with gameplay videos from other players. You can opt in or out of having your gameplay videos shared through this feature. You can also now hide your remote play connection status if you're worried about it. Game help has been expanded by adding community game help features. In game help, you will see hints labeled community game help in supported games, which indicates that the hint was generated from other players' gameplay videos. You can participate and opt in by going to your settings, captures, auto captures, community game help, and then select participate. What a nightmare that is.
What a riveting sequence of words.
You can also opt out at any time. In remote play, if the persistent message remote play connected is displayed during your remote play, you can now hide that. Go to settings, system, remote play, and just turn it off. They've also improved the system software performance and stability because they do it every time.
It's important.
And they've improved, the messages and usability on some screens.
So it's funny because I forgot all about this, and then I booted up Stellar Blade to play a bit more of it today, and then bing on my notification on my phone from the PS app going like, "Yo, this game falls under the game help. You want to check it out?" And I was like, "What the fuck are you?" my initial reaction was, "Is this that like activity card bullcrap from like 2 years ago, 3 years ago?" I have no idea. And then I didn't click on it. So I love that as a concept. Especially with this an opt in and out sort of space. The remote play connected thing is frustrating, so that's good. But also, it's not really a setting that's kind of needed. Like, it's interesting. Like, this update does feel like it's delivered a specific improvement. However, it doesn't feel massive, you know? It's not like when they, you know, introduced Dolby Atmos, because obviously that perfect for what I want. I'm like, yes, you know? Or when they've improved trophies, I'm like, yeah, let's go. But, you know, well, one thing that I have enjoyed, as I mentioned earlier, is Fallout 4. I discussed its upgrade to the PS5 version that dropped earlier this week. However, Max, there has been some confusion. And the confusion even got me. And I went, huh? So, those you may remember, a little bit of while ago, Fallout 4 was a part of that launch PS Plus collection. Is that what was it called? Where it's like, hey, here's like 15 games. Like, if you just bought a PS5, have fun. So that version that you have obtained, I think it's also in PS Plus Extra, it turns out you cannot upgrade to the PS5 version doing that.
Yet.
So I myself had that same problem. I went, oh, it's in my library. Sweet. I'm not paying $25. Why should I be paying $25? And I went to the, you know, product, I went to me, and I went everything around it. No luck. So I had to come into the studio, find the Fallout 4 disc on my shelf. I have to go the disc route. I'm bummed about that. But it worked. However, the good news is that Bethesda is aware of this issue and is apparently working hard to fix it. In an update on Discord of all places, and later then posted to Twitter, that makes more sense, a spokesman said, quote, "We've seen some confusion regarding the free Fallout 4 next-gen update for PlayStation Plus Extra members. The Fallout 4 next-gen update will be available to PS Plus Extra members through the PlayStation Game Catalog. Your patience is appreciated. While the team works on this." The bad news is that there is no time frame currently given, so we'll just have to wait and see whether this fix is forthcoming. As some may recall, there was a similar issue with Final Fantasy VII Remake Integrate, with Sony managing to fix the issue in about a day or so. Where IGN has contacted Bethesda to ask if there were any plans to refund players who have purchased the game before the settlement was issued. I presume no comments were made. Game Pass subscribers on Xbox and PC seem to be unaffected by this issue. Interesting.
Yeah, this isn't the first time that Sony has had hiccups with their upgrade piling.
Yeah, and that is the downside. Like, I remember, like, back in the day, like, kind of poo-pooing on whatever Xbox called it. And then I also poo-pooed PlayStation on their version of it too, like having to constantly, you know, pay or whatever. Where here, it isn't just as simple as, you know, put the disc in, get PS5. Like, there, you have to go into the, this is not news to anyone, by the way. They have to go into the PSN, and then you've got to select the PS5 upgrade, which then triggers it in your library. Like, it's not as simple as, you have a PS5, here's your PS5 version. Like, you have to register it as a purchase to connect it to your account. So if that's not there, surprise, you do not get that PS5 upgrade. It's not the Xbox you plug in and goes, oh, you're running a Series X? Boom, here's the Series X version.
Yeah.
I do wonder, like, what the fix on this is. I imagine it's a simple back-end trigger. I understand it's likely connected to somewhere in the back-end not registering the PS Plus ownership as a license of ownership, therefore not automatically giving you that upgrade. But I guess we'll wait and see on what that turnaround time is.
Patent pitch.
Ooh.
A recent listing that focuses on the idea of, quote, auto-playing portions of a video game. Essentially, an autoplay feature would mean a game takes over control and plays itself during segments that a player might find boring or time-consuming. The example used is grinding, the need to gain XP and level up in order to meet the challenge of a boss fight or continue with the game's story. Rather than do this manually for hours on end, this autoplay system could, in theory, take care of that for you, leaving you to play the parts of the game you actually care about. To do this, the game would invite you to engage the autoplay mode, at which point AI using data from the user's play model will take over and do the legwork on your behalf, simulating the gameplay style of the user. Once the grinding is taken care of, a notification to resume normal play would pop up and you will continue playing as usual. Quote, by using autoplay mode, users can avoid the need to play parts of a game that they do not like playing and reduce the amount of time it takes to complete the game because the AI player can play the grinding portions of the game at a faster speed, end quote, the patent reads. As noted by Xputer, numerous MMORPG titles on PC and mobile utilize some form of autoplay mainly to grind through battles or to cover a player while they're absent from the game. It's not totally unheard of, but it's certainly not the norm in the majority of modern titles on console.
As someone that's played a lot more MMORPGs, what's your stance on this, Maximus?
I love a good auto-grind function. That's one of the reasons why I like a lot of the new remakes, the new remasters of old Final Fantasy games that give you the ability to run the game at double speed. Because essentially, when I'm grinding, I'm pushing one button constantly, and that's all I'm doing. So over there, I'm running double speed Final Fantasy while I'm watching YouTube over here, and I'm just pushing one button.
See, this is where the answer is, just don't make the game so fucking grindy.
Yeah, but sometimes I want to just grind to get ahead. Sometimes I'm looking for a specific drop that doesn't drop.
Look, my major concern around this is not, well, the AI, but not the use of AI, as you would think. The AI part of having to visualize how an AI thinks I play has me worried because I play like garbage.
And then you're like, oh God, I'm terrible.
Yeah, like, and I'm watching my what a computer thinks I play like, and I go, oh, I'm really bad. That's confronting. And like, that's how, like, you know, admittedly how I see this. But yeah, my stance is like, if you have to, I guess in the same way that we talk about, like, you know, Assassin's Creed as an example, where they, you know, they've made the games more grindy to incentivize you buying the microtransactions. Now, granted, we know full well the patents get made all the time. Nothing ever comes out of. It's all about locking down the principle of an idea. But yeah, like if they're doing this, but like, hey, we're going to incentivize you to not play the game that you should be playing. Like in an MMORPG, I can understand the benefits of doing that.
Like, I don't think it's going to be in all games. It's not like...
Oh, yeah, like, I absolutely agree, but...
Marvel Spider-Man 3, and it's going to be like, if you don't like the web swinging, we'll auto-web swing you across the map for you.
Pretty sure you can do that with accessibility options, but that's a bit different. There's a difference between, like, hey, I'm going to get assistance in being able to traverse this game because of my ability challenge, then, hey, I don't want to punch these, like, warthogs for the next 5 hours to get this random amount of loot. So, like, I guess my question around this, now, obviously, you would be the source of truth on this. I would, if this were the case within a console game, this is disabling your trophy. This should disable your trophies. If you use this feature to move through sections of the game, in the same way that you can't, your trophies, once again, using Fallout as a recent example, if you activate mods in that game, you can no longer get trophies. So if I could play a game, skip sections that are boring, because that's the wording, not the section of the grind, the parts that are boring, I can get, yeah, and I've got all these trophies for all these games I haven't completed.
But you realize that they're specifically disabled because you could make a mod to just ping the trophy without actually having to play the game.
Isn't that exactly what this pattern is? An ability to not play the game?
Yeah, but I mean, like, so for instance, you could literally turn on Fallout 4 and push a button and all the trophies pop, as opposed to this being like, I'm playing the game. There's a section that I don't particularly feel like doing, whether that be, you know, killing 20 mobs to get to go to the next area. I think is vastly different than being like, hey, I can just instantly pop these trophies and not actually have to play any of the game.
Oh, absolutely. I am being intentionally hyperbolic in that comparison. However,
it depends on how far they go, because also if it's based on your own gameplay and you haven't done one of those sections before, then you're not going to be able to do it. The AI is not going to be able to do it anyway. So you have to play a portion of it to do it. So let's say, try to think of let's use Paw Patrol for an example.
Thank you.
At the start of some of those levels, you have to play a sky and fucking dodge the fucking balloon.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't want to do that every time. If I could AI that every other time once I've done it once, sweet.
Oh, I would agree. Those levels were poo. And then trying to get the platinum with James and to, you know, because, like, obviously, we played it here. So I got the platinum together at my place. He went back to his mum's, did it himself. But, like, having to run some of those missions multiple times were painful. Painful.
Not like we're booting up Elden Ring and being like, oh, this boss fight's boring. I'll just let the AI play it for me.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the intent.
That's not the intent. But the, once again, the intent of microtransactions wasn't what it is now. Like, I know I'm talking about, like, the whole what-about-ism, like, what-if-ism, like, you know, what could fuck happen. But it is one of those things, if we've learned anything from this industry, is that you give them an inch, they're going to take a fucking mile. And, like,
but the other thing is that it's, from the wording of this, it also seems like it's going to be up to developer discretion of how it's implemented.
That's not trustworthy.
So if the developer doesn't be like, if the dev's like, this part needs to be played, and we're just not going to put the auto function in to this area. But I have a feeling it's going to be simplistic stuff like, that a lot of games already have. You put a waymark on a map and you're like, walk me there. And then you can go make a sandwich and come back.
So my answer to that, and this is someone who has bounced out on games because the grind is stupid, design your game better. Like, if you have to have a skip function, then your game is not doing what it's supposed to do. Oh, an example, right?
Isn't that just what fast travel is, but without the loading screen?
Yeah, then just do that. Then just pull fucking fast travel in. If they're like, oh, we don't have fast travel, but you can make the game walk itself. I'm like, then just implement fast travel. Like, an example, The Witcher 3. So the best parts of that game, even though it's a game that I'm not really a big fan of, traversing the world, you find cool things along the way. The game actively incentivizes you to explore and experience the game. Very similar like Elden Ring, I guess, right? So why, you know, not once again, up to developer discretion, but we're using, if we talk about this in a wider context, that's because that game is well designed. You don't want to skip anything because it's all fucking good.
They also have that function where if you're on Roach the horse, you have to push and hold a button and he will stay on the roads and he'll go to where your quest marker is.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's already implemented in a lot of games.
I agree, because I had considered that, because in the same, I think Far Cry also has a...
I have a feeling that this pattern is only going to affect a specific set of games.
Mm.
So, like, I'm picturing stuff like Diablo, where I'm just killing shrews of things in a room. I'm not thinking that it's going to be like, you're stuck on this puzzle in Prince of Persia, we'll do it for you.
Which, once again, if it's run by AI, it would just be me failing at that puzzle for hours. And then eventually the AI would call you and go, hey, Max, how do I get past this puzzle? And then AI Max would come and help me.
I have a feeling it'll be for very specific things, like...
If it's ever implemented as well.
If it is ever implemented, so like mini games or levels that are constant throughout the game that you just can't be fucked doing every single time. Then sure, do it.
Yeah. Look, it is, you know, as I mentioned, you give companies an inch, they take a mile, and they find ways to exploit things. And I have a feeling this is exactly what's going on over here. This is called the Fellowship of the Merged, according to Max. So the Embracer Group, the company best known for acquiring an obscene number of studios, then closing them and keeping the IP, and then laying off thousands of folks when they didn't work because they owned too many things that cannibalized themselves. It is now split into three separate entities. So following its massive restructure plan, the business is divided into a trio of companies, which should only be very suspicious, each with their own leadership and specialities. Asmodee Group will take charge of tabletop games, while Embracer's video game empire is being shared out between the two new entities, and their names are Coffee Stain and Friends, and Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends. God fucking damn it. Coffee Stain and Friends will be responsible for, quote, indie and A/AA premium and free-to-play games for PC, console, and mobile, end quote, as well as Coffee Stain and Friends. This group also houses the likes of the Ghost Ship, Tarsia, Tuxedo Labs, and THQ Nordic. They're the Friends. With control of Deep Rock Galactic, Goat Simulator, Satisfactory, Wreckfest, Teardown, Valheim, and over 200 other IPs. Meanwhile, Middle Earth and Friends will helm AAA development and publishing of, I don't know, some franchise, I suppose. Under this umbrella of studios like Crystal Dynamics, Dam Buster Studios, Eidos Montreal, Flying Wild Hog, Triple Wire, Vertigo Games, Warhorse Studios, and Foray Games. IPs include Tomb Raider, Deus Ex, Dead Island, Killing Floor, Kingdom Come Deliverance, Metro, and, to my surprise, The Lord of the Rings. They could have named this so much better. They could have called it this fucking the Fellowship of Middle-earth, and it would have been great. The rationale behind this decision is not only to make the whole enterprise more attractive to shareholders, but also to improve the effectiveness of each group. I have belief of why they've done this. Each will operate independently from the others and thus able to focus on their own goals and targets, rather than have everything lumped together and led by a single board. Quote, the new structure enables the best possible greenlighting models, portfolios, and go-to market strategies for indie games as well as AAA games through two separate, more focused entities, end quote, the press release reads. Editorial, what the press release should read is the Embracer name is so fucking toxic that we have no choice but to separate into something to identify it differently. And also, as a company and as a corporation, the Embracer Group is so fucked fiscally that by separating it into three separate companies, we can move a bunch of money around and it all seems above board. Once again, for the shareholders, rather than have one company that's crumbling under its own bullshit, we're going to have three smaller companies seemingly doing okay, or one doing better than the other, because they can just move it around when secretly, just like this entire fucking time, they are all doing poorly. Is that too cynical?
No, it's spot on.
Thank you. What's your thoughts on this, Max?
It's about the same.
Apart from the fucking naming conventions being garbage.
No, it's exactly the same.
No, but look, it's the short answer, right? Like, and like, I'm not a fucking smart person. I keep swearing. We got in trouble for swearing in the comments other day on YouTube. Sorry. But for this is so blatantly, like, this is the equivalent in one location, creating various offshore accounts to move money around. You have these placeholder companies that all, yes, they all have their own boards, whatever, whatever, but they're all collectively part of this head branch, right? Like, they're all still the Embracer Group, but they have to repackage and rename it to not make it look so gross. And they've named them as if they're like kindergarten TV shows. Why Coffee Stain? What is the connection? That makes zero sense.
It's what they saw on their desk when they thought of the name.
They're like, Coffee Stain. And Friends. All right, cool. All right, we don't own all the stuff for Lord of the Rings. That's pretty cool. Middle-earth's a great name. What's a good name of collective individuals that would work within the Middle-earth Lord of the Rings? Fuck it, Friends. You know, Frodo, he had all those friends, right? Yeah, yeah. They came together as a collective of friends. I have no idea what that name would be. If only we had some source material that we actively cared about and could look towards. That'd be really cool. We'll just settle with this, I suppose. Idiots.
All right, Ryan. This last story is called Not My Cleavage. So Stellar Blade has launched a huge acclaim this weekend, but not every fan is delighted with Shift Up's PS5 debut. Players have spotted some changes to a couple of costumes in the final product, prompting accusations of censorship from publisher Sony. Of course, it wouldn't be the first time Sony has requested changes in PlayStation games, as a more titillating cutscene in titles like Devil May Cry 5 were inexplicably edited on.
Didn't PS4. They blur a butt?
Yeah. This decision was later reversed. A petition on change.org with the accompanying hashtag of Free Stellar Blade
has blown up
this weekend after the title's day one patch, which also bundles in New Game Plus, claimed a couple of outfits in the game were edited due to censorship. The crux of the issue appears to be to center on two unlockable outfits in the outing, the Holiday Rabbit and the Cybernetic Bondage.
Well, the name should fucking tell you.
In both cases, additional material has been added to the costumes to cover up the protagonist Eve's plentiful cleavage. Those who purchase the Blu-ray retail release of the game without the patch installed can still unlock all the original, more revealing versions of the nanosuits, causing fans to ponder whether the outfits were censored or not. Director Hyung-Tae Kim, when asked directly about this during a launch event, denied any accusations, stressing, quote, "The final costume we wanted to show you is indeed the costume in the patch." However, he admitted this answer, quote, "may not be enough to convince our users, and that discussions are taking place internally on the matter."
This may be one of the most pathetic and embarrassing things in all my years of being a games and fan enthusiast or whatever. Like, you, okay, this is the thing people don't understand. Censorship is up to the discretion of, you know, the individual, right? In that this is a game funded by PlayStation in their own personal marketplace. They can dictate what is and what isn't able to be released on their product as they are financially supporting it. Just because you have this need to pull your dick to some digital boobs and, like, where, I don't mean to alarm you, boobs are fucking everywhere on the internet, there's other places that you could go. Like, this is so embarrassing. This is genuinely embarrassing.
Click the link and have a look at what the. So for those in chat, I posted the link of one of the pictures that have been.
They gave her an under singlet. Okay. Yeah. So.
That's all.
In terms of a practical outfit, that yes, that is better. Like, and to make it worse, it's a zip. Like, if they like, they could have zipped it up, but they didn't. They gave her a nice, I don't know, something under her shirt to support her heavy cleavage. Dear God. I fucking hate gamers, man. Anyone that has signed this, you neckbearded fuck, should be ashamed of yourself. Like, legitimately. Like, I'm not, I don't care. Legitimately. You should look in the mirror and just be genuinely ashamed at the thing that you are choosing to put your focus on as if it's someone that has been locked in jail unfairly. It's boobs, so, you dickheads.
Not that this is in any way an excuse, but up until, I think it was last week, they released a statement saying that Stellar Blade would be uncensored in all regions. And then they've done this, and everyone's like, hey, you told us it was going to be uncensored, and you've now... What?
Well, hang on. No. The question is every version the same? Then there is, in fact, no censorship. If there is a discrepancy between regions, that this region has this and this region has that, sure, you could make that accusation. However, if every version of the game is delivered...
If every version got the day one patch and they've patched into all regions, that it's not...
Then that is their artistic decision to make that change. Now, granted, this is the same folks that be like, you know, Souls, the games are hard. It's part of the artistic discretion. Like, pick a side, you fucking idiots. The short answer is, if every region, if every country has been given the same version of this day one patch, then it is not censorship. It is the decision of the individuals, wherever their pressure, quote unquote, is from. If the company that pays for your thing says, if you want our money, you do this, cool. I would like to see Shift Up do this without the backing of PlayStation, because they could make that choice if they want to. They chose to take the money. They made these choices, and a bunch of people bitching and whinging about some digital titties ain't going to change that. Now, granted, the Devil May Cry 1 is a discrepancy, because you've got versions over on this platform not having a blurred buttocks, and then you've got PS5, the PlayStation version, with a blurred buttocks. That is explicit censorship. Straight up. Does it matter? No, because who fucking cares? However, in comparative to this argument, this is not. Quick bits, Max. As I quickly note down the time that I ranted about digital boobs unreasonably. Quick bits. This one's exciting. Fortnite Festival Season 3 has been updated to have Billie Eilish. You didn't put that in there, but that caught my attention.
I care more about this than Billie Eilish.
However, it has added supports for Rock Band 4 guitar controllers. Seeing as Rock Band 4 is no longer supported in DLC, Harmonix has since been folded into essentially the Fortnite team with Epic. This is the closest we'll ever get to more Rock Band. And especially with that Riftmaster controller coming out and being $300 Australian, if I can use my old controllers, win. I got the Rock Band 4, the Jaguar, yeah? Yeah, I got the old Rock Band 3 Fender. It's one that I've been using. I was trying to get that Jaguar. It's near impossible to find, by the way. It's stupid. I hate it. Because I want one. Next free Lords of the Fallen update turns the game into a roguelite.
What? I have no idea how, but I'm keen to try it.
That sentence alone is quite interesting.
And I'm excited to hear your thoughts on the next quick bit.
Well, there you go. Tomb Raider 1-3 remastered update will return the removed sexy posters of Lara. Okay.
Yeah, they patched out all their like pin-up posters of Lara Croft. They're like, we'll put them back in.
Okay. Yeah, once again, the fact that they have recoiled on their decision... that's not the right term. The fact that they have gone, fine, we'll put him back in. Then that aligns with the same as Devil May Cry. They made a conscious decision to remove it. Now, it's a bit weird that there's a bunch of peer pressure. People like, give us them square titties. Like, you know, they either want like unreasonable, like bulbous titties, or they want square pointy titties. God, gamers are pathetic. Says the guy who's been doing a weekly PlayStation podcast for 6 years, and loves wrestling. I understand pathetic because that is me, but at least I'm not this bad. All right, Max, what games are coming out this week?
I couldn't find any.
Oh, sweet.
And I assume that there are going to be some. I just don't know what they are because I couldn't find a list of them.
You know what I really miss, but I also don't? The PlayStation drop. Block. The drop on the block. Or whatever the fuck it was called. Oh, I just had a stroke. The block. The block. That's what I used to watch The Block for. Not for like them being able to turn this rundown, apartment block in the inner city Melbourne into this gentrified piece of shit. I used to love watch it because at the end of every episode, they're like, hey, here's the PlayStation games that are coming out this week. I'm like, you know what, Scotty? You're a ledge. Thank you for sharing the latest upcoming PlayStation games. And then he would, be Scott Cam. And then we'd be all sad about it because it's Scott Cam. Yeah. What a side rant on the block. But big thank you to everyone for joining us. Once again, we do really appreciate a long episode this week because we bullshit about things that weren't really PlayStation related, like Magic the Gathering and Max's new card addiction. A returning card addiction, I should say.
Yeah. I think it might actually be that one that I'm pointing to. One of those is filled with Final Fantasy trading cards.
See, look, I think I talked about this previously. Like, I have discovered that a company called Panini, great name, make WWE trading cards. And I was this close to considering it. And then I realized I'm poor and I can't afford fucking bits of cardboard. So that idea nipped in the bud pretty quick. However, like, my love for my faction mode in WWE and the Diamond Dynasty is still continuing as I daily every day just to get new cards. But at least I'm not spent any money yet. So
yeah.
All right, Max, send this bad boy home.
All right, everybody. This PlayStation conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come and check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopcultures. We can watch and record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, leave a comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist, as well as our merchandise store, popculturist.com/shop, where you can buy shirts, other assorted shit with our logos on it. But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And that was For the Players. And don't forget the incredibly important hashtag #FreeStellarBlade, like it's some sort of political movement, you morons. Max?
Yo.
Are you in that form?
Huh?
Did you join that change.org?
No.
Oh, good.
I just didn't update my game file.